What's up, guys? I just want to say thank you very much for all the support on the special. Please, if you haven't watched it, go watch it. Like it, comment, all that good stuff. Live and Alive, streaming now on my YouTube. What's up, guys? The holidays are coming, and I'm going to be straight up with you. I'm just trying to get rid of the merch I have. We got quite a bit of merch left, and I just want to get rid of it, and I want to get rid of it for you guys. All right, so here's what we got going on. There is a huge, talking about fire sale, y'all, huge fire sale in the merch store on my website at ryansickler.com. We've got $10 tees and hats, $20 hoodies and pants. You got stickers in there. But listen, here's the thing. Just order, because trust me, every order comes with a free gift, and any apparel purchase comes with two free gifts. All right, that's a chance to get a lot of gifts, y'all. All right, so go over to the merch shop right now. Get your $10 hoodies, night pants. I don't think there's anything more than $20 over there, honestly, in the whole entire store. So go get your stuff now, ryansickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpants Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com, and Ryan Sickler on all your social media. And I'm going to start this episode like I start them all. Thank you for watching this show. Thank you for supporting anything I do. If you're already this far in, drop a comment, help out the algorithm. You know how it all works. All right. We're just going to get into it. You know what we do here? We highlight the lowlights, and I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers, and I'm very excited to have this guest with us here today. First time on the Honeydew, ladies and gentlemen, Greg Warren. Welcome to the Honeydew, Greg Warren.
Thanks, Ryan. It's good to be here, man.
Thank you for being here, buddy. We've been having great chats before we started here. Yeah. I can't wait to get into it, but before we do, please promote everything and anything you would like.
Okay, thanks, man. Well, I got a new a special out. It's called The Champ, and it's on YouTube. It's on Nate Bargatze's YouTube channel, Nateland, and it dropped a few weeks ago, and that's what I'm most excited about. So
all right, yeah. Where can they find you on social media and all that stuff?
It's a gregwarrencomedy.com is my website, and I think that has all the links on there. But yeah, pretty excited about the special.
Good for you, dude.
Thanks, man.
Let's get into it, because yeah, I'm excited to hear your story. So where are you from originally?
St. Louis.
All right, from St. Louis. And family of what? How many brothers, sisters?
Two brothers. No sisters.
Are your parents together?
My mom passed away 9 years ago.
She did?
Yeah. And my brother Devin, actually, I didn't mention it, is 18 years younger than me. So
Same parents?
Same parents.
Same mom and dad?
Same mom and dad.
Yeah. Are you the middle child?
I'm the oldest, yeah.
18 years younger? Was it an accident, or were they really like, let's have another
baby? I don't think it was, intended. I was at some summer.
You're out of high school. You're pretty
much. In between junior and senior year of high school. And my dad, I was doing something, like I think it was Boys State. Do you remember what that was? It was like student government thing or whatever. But I did that, and I was called my dad from there. And he goes, "We need to talk about something." And I was like, "Ah, oh, man, my grades must have come, because it was early." And I was like,
my grades can't. That,
yeah, it's like, yeah, this is what I knew we were going to have this discussion. He goes, "Your mother's pregnant." And I was like, "What?" You know, and took me a while to process. Yeah. So, yeah.
And how old's the middle brother?
He's 4 years younger than me.
So 14-year gap between him too. That's massive.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Are you guys all close?
Yeah, man. Okay. Yeah, we are. You know, and it's kind of fun now, because like my little brother has kids, and they're my nephews, and they're little kids. So it's like, I never had kids.
He did it young?
Well, he's, I'm 56, almost 57. So, yeah.
So growing up, what's it like for you? Your parents are married and together growing up though?
Yeah, okay, man. I had a pretty ideal childhood, I guess. I mean, everybody's got stuff, but my dad was a high school wrestling coach. He was my coach.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, okay. I was going to ask you how you got into it. So was he's a high school wrestling coach. Was he a prominent wrestler in his day as well?
I think he was decent, you know, but nothing. He was a pretty good football player. I think he played in the Air Force.
Oh, shit.
And he was a good high school wrestler, but nothing like crazy. He was,
just one of those good athlete dudes that could kind of be good at a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think he wrestled in Long Island. He grew up in Long Island. He was telling me, like, you know, when I was, you know, we talk about who's a state champ and all that stuff. He was like, we never even got to the state. It was a big deal if he just got out of Long Island, which mm-hmm. makes sense because it's so big. And, you know.
So he's your high school coach?
He was my high school coach.
Is that
coach.
When you start wrestling in high school?
No, I started at 5 years old.
Yeah. So he put you in it and you love it?
Yeah.
Are all your brothers wrestlers?
They all did wrestle at one time or the other. Mm-hmm. Those guys were primarily soccer players, though. I mean, they Me played too, in college. Yes. That you did, too?
Yeah, I was all JUCO. And
really?
Yeah, all community college, bro. Kingsville Community College, all JUCO.
Is it in Maryland?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right next to the community college I went to is right next to, you probably heard of UMBC.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. It's right next door.
Really? Yeah.
It's like their shed.
Yeah, you know? They had a run in the tournament a few years ago.
Yeah, they did. They took out like a top team in the first round, had a bit of a run. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody called them United Missouri Bank or something like that. It wasn't me. Not my joke. But so when I was in high school, there was a junior college called Merrimack Junior College, and it was right next to where I live. It was probably a mile and a half or whatever, and they had a wrestling team, and I would go up there. That's kind of how I got good, you know.
Just letting the older, more experienced guys beat the shit out of you.
I would go up there and work out with those guys every day.
At what age are you doing this?
Throughout high school.
So five, is your dad coaching you then, or is he just putting you in like the peewee stuff
he
and all?
He started the little league team that part of. And then I was around his teams, you know, mm-hmm. just, I don't remember a lot of it, but I was pretty good pretty quick. Cause you know, he was a good coach.
And so are you, I didn't do it till high school. So now you got me wondering too, are you cutting weight and stuff at an early age or
not?
Like, how do they protect the kids that are 5, 6, 7? Are there weight classes there?
I think there's weight classes. Yeah. I mean, the biggest protection is you have good parents, you know, and my dad was a good parent and a good coach. He didn't really even let me cut weight in high school that much. I think I tried it once. Yeah, I didn't cut a lot. I mean, you're a little here and there, but not when I got to college, it was insane.
We were using the sauna suits and kids would tape up trash bags and we had this guy I think he passed away. His name was Bob Hennard, man. Shout out to Mr. Hennard. This dude was our athletic director, but he was an older guy. And he was one of these, you know, when he walked, he'd have this kind of energy. He was bubbly and whatever. He was not a fool at all, but he knew how to turn a blind eye. And he would come in and there would have been a mandate that no sauna suits or trash bags were allowed to be used anymore, all this shit. He comes in, just, you know, 20 of us are wrestling. He's like, okay, guys. You couldn't even hear him. It's just all trash bags rustling. I'm like, God. And we're running in the sauna.
Yeah.
We would put we had a wool overcoat from World War II that we would pass around and put on, and we'd go outside and jog to try to drop 2 pounds real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just so I know we put our bodies through hell there. It's smart that your dad said. I feel like it probably stunts a lot of kids' growth. Oh, yeah. Like, it fucks you up. But you say college was
once
like
I got to college, it was because it was still, you could do anything.
All right, let me dial back for 1 second. Are you a state champ? Like, do you? A
couple times. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, all Missouri? Like, what weight class?
I think I won it at 138 and 145 my senior year.
You did?
Yeah.
What's that like?
It was good, man.
It was.
Yeah, man, it was one of the coolest times ever because high school is pretty fun and college was more rewarding, I think, at the end. But
was your high school, were they really into wrestling?
No, they weren't. And it bumps me out because I could have been like the really, really cool kid at a different high school. But I was I had a great experience.
Well, if you were a state champ in our school, it was a big picture on the wall with your pose and your record and all this. But I don't know who started it, but one of our coaches was like, enough of this. No kids come out to watch this or anything. So, you know, Vision Quest was big.
Yeah.
So this coach
changed my life.
He told, we'll talk about it. He told whoever, I guess Mr. Hennard, the athletic director. So when we wrestled, they would cut all the lights off.
Yeah.
Whole gym, pitch black. Oh, we had a bell. Someone had made like a little bell light. They would drop it down low over the mat, and you would just wrestle in the pitch black in this fucking spotlight. And let me tell you something. That gym filled up.
Oh, man.
It filled
up.
And we weren't even a big wrestling school.
That's awesome,
we were known. You know what we were known for? The band.
Yeah.
Our band would play. Like, they would win states, and they would always get on the awards. Like we just won yesterday, man. I pinned this kid in 6 seconds. I don't get something. Clarinet's getting fucking love right now.
I play clarinet, too. I did.
We read, bro. You're a fan of the licorice stick. I know, bro.
Yeah.
Are you good at it? Can you still play?
I could play a little. I don't play much. I picked it up. I was good. You know, yeah. And then I kind of gave it up. Mm-hmm. I think I was one of those guys like those guys like in the movies where it's like the football player kid that's like a natural athlete, mm-hmm. but puts nothing into it.
Yeah.
And I was that.
Bo Jackson. Not that he didn't put anything into it.
Yeah. But more just like the guy that like, always shows like the guy's God gifted, but doesn't work hard and doesn't do what he's supposed to.
Kid can do a flip and shit.
I was that with the clarinet.
Like, where are you? you just took to it? It's like, boom. What was like the most advanced song you could play and stuff?
Man.
Could you rip through a boop?
I could do, Rhapsody in Blue.
You can do that.
On the way up, you bend your breath. And I could still do it, man.
You can?
Yeah. I'm
you soaking those reeds and shit, man?
Yeah, man. I sound like I'm bragging, and I am a little bit.
Good. You know, listen, I can promise you this right now, bro. Nobody's ever sat in that seat in all the years I've done this and said I could fucking crush the clarinet.
Well, Ryan, it's because there's not a lot of guys that can't, you know? Like, I mean...
as soon as class was over, I was like, I'm done with this. But I did clarinet, trumpet, and I wanted to do drums, but my parents were like, you're not fucking doing drums. Yeah, we're not buying a drum set. But I still want to do it. I still have nervous energy. I want to learn how to put it into a rhythm.
I was thinking about this. Nobody seemed like in band practice, like in band class, those guys always were having the time in their life. Because like they were in the drummers were always like way in the back, and they were always like, it was always guys, and they were always like screwing around. You know, like always having and I was like right up front next to the band director, and those guys, it seemed like they were always having fun, man.
You're such a juxtaposition at our school because it was the jocks, and it didn't matter what sport, the jocks, the band, female too, versus the band nerds and the theater nerds. But you're the fucking state goddamn, you're not just a wrestler, you're the wrestler, and you're playing clarinet, bro.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody's fucking with your ass.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I got made fun of, but yeah.
Probably from a distance.
I don't think I knew I don't think I realized that you could fight as a wrestler, you know, in college I did.
So you win state champ twice in high school.
Yeah.
And then are you scholarship? Are you recruited? Did you get to choose where you wanted to? So where were your choices? What options did you have pretty much?
Missouri. Like some of the different schools in Missouri, mm-hmm. I think Southern Illinois, Evansville. I got a lot of letters from like those, like small private D2, D3 type schools mm-hmm. where, you know, it's like, oh, really good academically. And I didn't really, but then I got recruited to go to, West Point, the United States, and I wound up going there. And
you
I
did. Think,
yeah, I went there for a year and I quit, Ryan.
Shane Gillis did too, bro.
Yeah. Listen, man, I made it a lot farther than Shane did. I went a full year. I think he went for like a month or something.
I don't know. He wasn't long.
I don't know. I met him briefly one time, but I really want to meet him because I'd love to talk to him about some of that stuff. And I went the full year. And
you're wrestling the whole time?
I was hurt for a couple months of it, but I was on the wrestling team. I remember like we made it through all the stuff. Like we made it through the hazing, like it's over. And I was like, okay, I'm done with, you know, I'm done. I don't have to do it. And we went to this meeting and we were about to go on leave for, you know, like a month, which is amazing because your life is regulated. So I was looking, and there we went to this meeting to talk about what we were going to do when we came back that summer. I think we were going to like drive tanks and all that stuff. And we all go to this meeting and they were like, when you get back to your barracks, we're going to have an inspection, an equipment inspection. And I remember thinking, I don't have any of that equipment. I lost it. And they're going to, this yelling thing is not going to be over. They're going to yell at me about that. Like,
Where did you lose it?
I don't know, man.
You lost a gun?
I didn't lose a gun. Oh. I did lose the firing pin though one time. That was the worst, one of the worst experiences.
What are they just in so your you, face you break screaming
down,
at
you? You break down the weapon. You have to take apart the weapon and put it back together.
What is the weapon? What are they giving
M16.
You? M16. Okay, an M16.
So you break it down and put it back together in the field. Mm-hmm. And I lost the firing pin. It was like gone. And they're like screaming at me, like, Warren, find the fire. But I could also tell they're screaming at me because these were upperclassmen. And it wasn't like funny fraternity. Like, you saw them as like, I'm terrified of this mm-hmm. person, even though it's senior in college, you know, mm-hmm. but they're screaming at you. But I could also spot like the fear in his eye. Cause he knew if I lost that, it's coming down on him. Right. So they are screaming at me and I cannot find it. And it's like in the grass and we're all like looking around and some miracle after like 10 minutes of them, like being like, you are what I saw the firing pin and I got it. And he was like, good job, Mr. Warren. Good job. And I remember this guy, Cadet Costigan, he was like, not a good job, Warren. You're an idiot for losing it in the first place, you moron. You know,
yeah. He's good job because he knows his ass.
He was terrified. He's like, he was terrified. So yeah, I remember screwing that up bad.
So they come to check your equipment and you don't have it. What are you missing?
Well, no, I just was on the way back, marching back uh-huh. when we had the meeting. I decided I'm quitting.
Is that AWOL?
No, I didn't leave. I go to like the guy and I'm like, hey, I'm quitting. And then I have to explain to 10 more people that sure. I'm because you know, it's like, okay.
And they want to keep telling you, you got
to
stay.
Yeah. And then commitment. I got to like the top guy and I was like, I'm going to quit. And I felt like, you know, I was a kid. I felt like I was letting down my country and all this, mm-hmm. but I also was like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know? Cause I was a pretty straight arrow kid in high school and I wanted to party and stuff too. Like, you know,
but are you so did you get to wrestle at all in college? Yeah. West Point?
At West Point I did. You know, did. I think it was a red shirt year.
Yeah. So then do you still have your seniority? Like you still have a true freshman?
I still have 4 years eligibility.
Okay. And where do you go after West Point?
Missouri. Okay. And I was, man, I was literally thinking about doing comedy. I didn't know what it was at that point, but I was like, and then I got home and the Missouri coach showed up to my house like 2 days later. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go to Missouri and wrestle.
And what weight class do you wrestle at Missouri?
150. And then my senior year, I bumped up to 158.
And how'd you do?
I was good. My senior year, I made All-American. My senior year, I got seventh in the country.
Damn, dude.
The top eight get All-American. So
fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you were telling me earlier, the crazy, like the junior year I was at the Nationals and I lost.
This is small world shit, right? This is crazy.
Yeah. I lost in the blood round. It's what they call it. It's like, if you win, you're an All-American. If you lose, you go home. And, it was at the University of Maryland in College Park. And,
I was there
and you were there. That's insane, crazy, man.
We're talking before. And I say, you know, I remember it was like. It's probably, was it 1990
then? It
was then?
1990.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1990. Yeah. I'm a junior. Might have been senior.
March of 1990.
Well, yeah. March 8th is my birthday. Yeah. So I'm a junior in high school. And the wrestling coach is like, hey, you guys want to skip school today? I got a couple of tickets down to the University of Maryland to watch.
Yeah.
Cole Fieldhouse is where it was.
Cole Fieldhouse.
To watch the Nationals wrestling. We're like, fuck yeah. So my buddy of mine on the team, we drive down ourselves. And, you know, we go watch and I probably saw you wrestle. We were there all day.
Well, it was during school. Cause I was out by Friday night. I was out.
Yeah.
So I was wrestling Friday during the day.
It's crazy.
That's
crazy.
Yeah.
I think I was wrestling in that tournament. Like it would have had to been night. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You lost in that one right there, or you would have been All-American back to back years.
Yeah. If I would have lost that match mm-hmm. that night, Friday night, I lost. Yeah. T-Don Fleischman. He's from New Mexico.
And then I want to get into the food and cutting weight because I don't miss you say it was crazy there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I wrestled in high school and I was mentioning to you, we were very lucky because Maryland's this really interesting part of the country where you're close to DC, Delaware, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Jersey's close, Virginia, you know, it's right Virginia. Here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had the Carr brothers. We first had Solomon Carr, and you were like, yeah, I know who the fuck he is, which just blows me away.
This is insane that these guys were people you worked out with.
So Solomon was, I can't remember where he came from originally, but
Erie, PA.
It was Pennsylvania. That's right.
Erie, PA.
So he comes down to Maryland, and I didn't tell you this out there. So he's working as, like a counselor for troubled kids and shit, you know, but. So one night, you know, we don't have parents and stuff. So he's like, I'm going to take you guys home. I'm like, great. It's me and my brother and another kid that live on the same street. And we all wrestle. And he's taking us home. We're trying to get the fuck out of the van. We're like, Solomon, we can't get out. He's like, yeah, man. Bad kids can't get out. Hold on. He had to get out and let us out. We were dying. We're like, this is your work van? He's like, yeah, it's the work van. Bad kids couldn't get out at all. We're like, there's no handles in here.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's driving wild kids. Yeah, man. Yeah, not just, he's driving wild kids that can't let themselves out. He's got to get out.
You said troubled. You meant, yeah, I was thinking
big
like.
Big time trouble. Oh, thinking, no. Yeah. They'll beat someone like that, those kind of kids. So, and he's the guy to do it. You ain't fucking with him. So we talked about it. Like, this dude's body, he's like a sumo wrestler. His ass was like from his middle of his hamstrings to the middle of his back, all like this muscle mass. And his legs, he was deformed. And like was it knock knee then?
Yeah.
Where your knees go in.
Pigeon-toed maybe.
But his feet would stay flat on the fucking ground. And he was like, you couldn't move him. We'd all try to get up and take a single leg, a double. He'd work out. Boom, boom, boom. So he was so good and so well known.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you even know what you're doing, that right away, he got a head coaching job at our rival high school, Westminster High, where this kid I'm going to tell you about, Mike Jones, would wrestle. But he was like, I'm going to do you a solid, not just abandon you. My brother, Nate Carr, who was wrestling at WVU, Solomon's an Olympian. Pretty sure he wrestled in, I think it was Solomon that wrestled in, and there's another brother too that
Carr was an Olympian. Joe Carr was an Olympian in high school.
It might have been, he came for like a day or something.
Nate was an Olympic gold medalist, though.
That's right. Nate was the gold medalist. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So Nate Carr comes in, and I'll never forget, dude. He's a kid still. He's in his 20s and he's walking around. He's got his jock strap on. He's got his pants down, his ass is out. He's just like, all right, guys, let's go. We're like, what the fuck? We loved him. He's so
great
fun
guy,
and
man.
Funny. He was great. And he was not built like his brother at all. He was like, built. This motherfucker was a rock.
Explosive, man.
So fat. Never seen anybody faster.
Yeah.
And he taught us so much. So now he's our assistant coach.
You guys.
And we're going and wrestling against his brother's team.
Yeah.
So he's like, you better fuck those guys up. But they had this dude named Mike Jones. I've told this story before. This guy was so good that he would whisper what he was going to do to you before he'd do it. So there's times where
psychopath,
guys like,
man.
He said, headlock, man.
No way, man.
And he would go, headlock. And then boom, hit you. But it made you stutter enough because he knew you're listening.
Really?
He would go, cradle. Boom, hit you with a cradle, whisper in your ear. And every dude, and it would come off like whispering that shit to
no
me.
No way,
was so
man.
Good. He was so good.
That's insane.
But yeah, the Carr brothers were my coaches, which is, nice to hear from a fucking state wrestler and college athlete how great they were.
I got to
meet. Like how lucky we really were, too.
Yes, man. Nate's one of the greatest wrestlers in American history.
That's crazy.
Yeah, Nate was, I think he's my coach in college. Used to wrestle with Nate. So it was the Big Eight Conference back then. And this guy, Kenny Monday, who was an Olympic gold medalist, and Nate and my coach were in the same weight class.
Oh,
is that
right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think Nate beat Kenny in college, I think. But yeah, Nate and Kenny both went on to be Olympic gold medalists.
Yeah, it's
I mean, I've met him a couple times. I mean, he's awesome. And his son is a really good wrestler.
It's just interesting to have, when you're a high school athlete, because I played every damn sport, lacrosse, baseball, basketball, wrestling, soccer. You're always seeing new coaches come in and out. So you're like, who's this fucking guy?
Yeah.
And then when you finally get one. So now I was telling you out there too, like now we're realizing who Nate is. And we're like, coach, shut the fuck up. Nate's talking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And
then, yeah.
The coach was like, hey man, I'm the coach.
We're well, like, your coach is bringing in Nate Carr. My dad, he had this thing. My dad was like, anybody, he would just bring these guys in all the time. Cause he'd be like, that guy says he wrestles.
Right.
Get different perspective, you know? And sometimes it would be like, a guy that wrestled in college, or then sometimes he'd be like, Dad, that's the janitor, and he's like, he doesn't know anything. Like he doesn't know what he's talking about, Dad. And we had to act like he's an expert and be like, yeah. He's like, coach, I'm coach. We're calling him coach.
Now. He just came over from the gas station.
Like this guy he has no clue what he's talking about. You know.
So tell me about the. It's got to be insane with the weight cutting and stuff in college, huh?
Like, yeah, it was stupid. I mean, because I think you came on right after. So when we were there, there were no rules. You could sauna suits. So we would, you know, you, if you're wrestling 150, you know, I was probably walking around 165 or 160. Mm. And you know, so you would starting about 24 hours before, you would dehydrate, and you just, you basically, we'd seal off the shower. We turn all the showers on. We put a couple of bikes in there. We put plastics on, and we'd seal off the showers with like a tarp.
Oh shit. You know? Were like riding bike in that steam.
Yeah. And we would put on Scorpions Live, and my friend Chip Bunner had it like choreographed to.
You guys are doing spin class.
Yeah, basically.
You're early spin class, man. This is amazing right now. I can't believe you guys are sweating and spinning, bro.
I'm a professional comedian. That was my life, and I never thought that that was the first spin class, and it was.
That's, nobody was doing that.
You're exactly right. You're right. It was spin class. So we go in there, and we had it
He's
like
choreographed.
We had it like you go through like the first two songs, then you could go out. And you could rest, and then you had to come in for a song.
Okay, Rocky, like a hurricane zone.
Yeah. And then, and then by the time you got through the album, like you could drop, I don't know, 7 or 8.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then,
how long was the album? Hour?
Hour-ish.
And so you're just pedaling and taking your breaks.
Take breaks. Yeah, and
but
then,
you're dropping 7 or 8 pounds just there.
But you would get to where, I remember you would get to where, like, I think at the Big 8 tournament, was the worst I ever cut weight, and that was my junior year. And like,
when you say worst, is it the most, or was it the worst time you had doing it?
The worst time I had, which probably meant it was the most. Like, I didn't.
What is the most? You know what you actually?
I don't know. I mean, it was over 10, I'm sure. I know that year at the Nationals, the year that you saw me.
Mm-hmm.
So Thursday night, yeah. You weigh in Wednesday. Back then, you could weigh in Wednesday night for Thursday match. So you got a lot of time to kind of get. And then Thursday night, you weigh in for Friday. So Thursday night, I weighed in for Friday. You could go Friday morning, but you don't want that, because then you got to weigh in and then wrestle. You know, like, I wanted to get it. I was the last guy to make weight. But I remember they said, all 150 pounders, you're released. You have 2 hours basically before we weigh you in.
And I see.
And I got on the scale, and I was 9.5 over, and I made it.
You did.
I made it, but it was
2.5 hours.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where basically you get to where that last pound and a half, you got nothing. I can't go back on the bike. So you just basically, there's somebody with you and like coach, and they'll just put you in the sauna. You know, they would put you in the sauna, and they'd come in every now with a hose and just hose you off to make sure you're alive.
Is that right?
We'd try to drink the water.
Yeah.
Like, stop drinking the water. So, yeah, man. And then you would drink Gatorade, or, you know, my friend Bobby Crawford drank a Diet Coke, which is probably the worst thing you can do.
Dude, I love Diet Coke, and that is horrible. Severely dehydrated.
Yeah, it's probably terrible.
So, and, you know, I just want to say, like, if you're cutting weight like that, what kind of fucking energy and performance do you have left to go out there and...
I mean, back then...
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't terrible, because like, so you weigh in Thursday night, and then I saw, you know, the day that you saw me, mm-hmm. or the day that you were there, I'm wrestling Friday. But I had a full 12 hours to kind of rehydrate.
Oh, so as long as you make that weight Thursday night, come Friday, even if you are 10 pounds heavier, you're not weighing in again, you're go.
You're back. Now you have to weigh in Friday night if you keep
weighing. Saturday.
Yeah.
I see. So if the more you go, the more you got to weigh.
Now this
in,
is
that
all
makes sense.
Different now. Like they got rid of it. Some kids died. And
they did.
Yeah. I think they died because of creatine and dehydration, but some kids died. So now it's like an hour.
Did you have problems with it?
This
cutting weight and stuff and all that?
I mean, I think I have problems.
Now because of it?
Yeah. I don't know if like health, but like I have an unhealthy relationship with food.
Tell me about it. Me too, bro.
Do you? You know,
I love to eat my feelings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I also, if I'm bored, I like to eat.
Yeah.
If I'm sad, let's eat some.
There you go.
If I'm happy, let's celebrate and eat some.
Yeah.
I definitely have an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah. You said you covered most of them. But yeah, I think it's like bored, sad. I've had some mental stuff with like guilt, you know, and it was funny. I was living out here probably early, I'm in 2006 or seven. And I realized I was, the binge eating had just gotten out of control, you know, and I would just binge. And I think part of it was some, I didn't know that I had some like, I found a lot later. I had some OCD guilt type stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would just be like freaking out about it. And I just eat. And it's also, you're trying to get started in comedy and, you know, or I'm out here and I got a little bit of heat and you're up and down 10 times and it's a much more boring story than the guys that have real drug problems. You know, those guys did cool stuff. but I just went to Jack in the Box or whatever. And
you're just what would be an order for you?
Well, I know.
Be honest.
Yeah, man.
First of all, how big are you? You're what, 6 what? You're tall.
No, no, man. I'm 5'9", man.
Are you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not taller than you.
Yeah, you are, man.
I got really an inch on you?
Yeah, you got no. an inch on me. You're taller than me, man. I've seen you, man. So I'm but I remember I would size go to Jack in the like Box, and then I would go get that Oreo ice cream was coming out back then. And
you
then
like the sweets, huh?
But then I would get, I didn't, at one point I didn't think that one of them was enough. And I also didn't feel that they put enough Oreos into the ice cream. So I'd get Oreos, and then I would get a package of Oreos to put in there to supplement. I remember I was at a checkout thing, one of them was like, "Hey man, you know there's Oreos." I was like, "Yeah, I know, man. Like I know." So I'm doing all this and I finally realized like I should
probably you know those Oreos in the Oreos.
Yeah, I know, man. Yeah, I do. Sure man. Do. Why don't you mind your own business? Because this is a project that I'm working on.
So every Christmas I buy my daughter and have since she's been born an ornament. Just one Christmas ornament. I write on it what's the year and everything. Save it. She can save it for her kids or whatever. With Aura, we started adding a new photo every year for Christmas. So you can add whatever you want, create whatever you want. You get unlimited free photos and videos. All you do is download the Aura app and connect to Wi-Fi. You can preload photos before it even ships, and you can keep adding from anywhere at any time. And if that wasn't enough, you can even add a personalized message with your gift before it arrives, and every frame comes packaged in a premium gift box with no price tag. You can't wrap togetherness, but you can frame it. For a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com and get $45 off Aura's best-selling Carver Mat Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code HONEYDEW at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code HONEYDEW. This exclusive Black Friday Cyber Monday deal is their best of the year, so order now before it ends. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Booking.com. I've got to say, if you're looking to grow your vacation rental business, this is the place to be. Booking.com is one of the most downloaded travel apps in the world, and for good reason. Since 2010, they've helped over 1.8 billion vacation rental guests find places to stay. That's billion with a B. But here's the thing. Most vacation rental hosts don't even realize they can list their properties on Booking.com. And if you're not on the platform, your rental is basically invisible to millions of Booking.com travelers worldwide. After all, they can't book what they can't see, right? But once you start listing on Booking.com, your property gets seen by a massive global audience of unique travelers. That means more visibility, more bookings, and more opportunity to accelerate the growth of your rental business. And it couldn't be any easier. You can register your property in as little as 15 minutes, and nearly half of the hosts get their first booking within a week. So if your vacation rental isn't listed on Booking.com, it could be invisible to millions of travelers searching the platform. Don't miss out on consistent bookings and global reach. Head over to Booking.com and start your listing today. Get seen, get booked on Booking.com. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code HONEYDEW. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. So whether that's Mind Magic gummies for creativity, PMS support to ease your cramps, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, Not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners are getting 20% off their first order with code HONEYDEW. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code HONEYDEW when you check out to save 20% off your first order. Now, let's get back to the do.
But I went to see somebody in LA in the Valley.
Why? What got to you? Was it your weight? Like, did you step on a scale? Like, what was?
No, I was never terribly overweight. I just, because I could work it off, you know, but.
So what made you go to see somebody to say, look,
I think,
man,
some level of depression, and then some level and just knowing the binge thing was out of control, you know? So I go into this guy in the Valley and you know, it was through insurance, which if you're going to go see a therapist, don't go through insurance. Those guys, he was a nice guy. So I'm sitting there, I'm telling him, I'm like, I've never been to therapy before. And I'm telling him about, like, yeah, man, I, you know, I eat cookies and stuff, you know, and he's he falls asleep.
No.
Like, yeah, dude.
The dude falls asleep.
The dude falls asleep. Therapy. And I'm telling my, he catches himself falling asleep. He goes, hey, man, I'm really sorry. He goes, I was up with a suicidal patient last night in the hospital. I'm like,
but tell me again how much you like Oreos.
I know exactly. I go, yeah, man. I just like, what? I'm a grown man in here talking about eating cookies, and there's some poor guy that's.
You know the shit I've heard is all this today.
Yeah, I'm like, I gotta go, man. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go talk about. I'm here telling cookie stories.
I bored him to death
with my stupid cookie story. Since then, Ryan, I have punched it up a little bit. Like, right. I can get, like, I've punched up the cookie story.
Good.
Yeah. Good. So, and it was, it, this guy fell asleep, and that's when I was like, it was one of those, I was like, man, this is pathetic. I didn't go anymore.
I had a therapist one time, and I'm in the middle of giving him my sob bullshit, and the dude starts eating. And I stopped him right there, and I go, hey, this is my time right now. What are you doing? He's like, I'm eating. I go, you don't schedule time for yourself to eat? He goes, I guess not. I go, do it on someone else's time. Yeah. And it doesn't care. Like, bro, I'm sitting here talking. I don't want to hear you chew your celery and shit.
Yeah.
And you know what? He called himself on it. He never did it.
Did he really?
Again.
That's,
yeah,
cool.
And I went and saw him for 2 years after.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, weekly for a couple years. And he brought it up to me, too. He goes, you're 100% right about that. I go, how would you fucking feel if I'm coming in here crying and I'm just like, is that right? Oh, yeah. Picking your teeth and shit. Well, you know what you need.
I remember one time, I don't know if this is before, because I've been to three or four therapists or whatever. But
all for this?
The cookie thing was the first time I started going to therapy.
I mean, what a shitty start.
Do you know that thing? I remember one time I was in Houston, Texas, and I was working the last stop, and it was like, I went on a binge like that night, and I ate a bunch of cookies, you know, and whatever. And then there's like, the stuff still sitting in the car. And I was like, I'm going to the gym. It's new leaf, you know? So I drive to the gym and I eat a couple of the cookies and I'm like, I don't want to go to the gym, you know? And then I remember somebody telling me, like, when you don't want to go into the gym, you go in, you get on the bike or you, whatever you're doing, start riding. If 3 minutes later you don't want to go, just leave, you know? So I go in, I change, I get on the bike. And I start riding, and about 30 seconds, I'm like, no. And I go back down to the locker room. I get my clothes. I go into the car. I eat all those cookies. I eat them all. Just sitting in the parking lot.
You go back into the gym?
No,
right,
no,
from
it was
there?
Over. No, you're once like, once nah. I go, it's over. It's over. There's nothing but television or, you know, laying around. Like, it's done. There's nothing. So if it's that kind of eating. Mm-hmm. And yet I remember like some woman like walking by the parking lot looking in, and she we
and
like,
just housing cookies
just housing cookies in the gym parking lot. Yeah. and she looks at me and she just had this level of understanding. I could tell she was like, yeah, man, I've been there. she was kind of overweight too, so I think she kind of looked at me like, yeah, I understand what you're going through. And then she got in. But so yeah, I think I went a couple more times, but I did go and find out I had this thing that was like, it's called scrupulosity OCD. It's like feeling guilty about stuff. sometimes about stuff you didn't even do, you know?
Can you give me an example what you would go through? Like, is there anything you actually felt guilty that you didn't do?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'll give you some of the more tamer examples because I'm not sure. I remember as a kid, like, thinking there's, like, my brother's truck broke. And I was like, I mean, he's a little kid. And I was like, I broke it, you know? Like, just because I remember in my mind thinking, like,
didn't?
No. I remember thinking, like, maybe I did. Like, maybe I accidentally broke it, or maybe I broke it. I don't know, but I can't prove to myself that I didn't. I can't know for sure because it's in the past. So I'm just going to say that I did and take the, and that got into, like, you know, later in life, I just would obsess. I'd just be like, did I do that horrible thing? You know, if I saw some, was reading a book about somebody that did something terrible, or, you know, or watching TV about somebody that did something, like I would, and I think I just,
so let me, I just want to be clear. I'm sorry. Yeah. Then you would think to yourself, not that I, did I do this, but did I do this to someone in my life?
Yes.
I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I do something like that? Am I capable?
Have I ever done something like that to someone in my life?
I've ever,
where's that? Why? What do you think that comes from?
It's a form of OCD. I didn't get that it was. And I think part of the eating binging was like, that's how I dealt with it. I'd be like, I might be a criminal. And then I just would just, well, life's over and just eat. I know it sounds, okay. It doesn't sound reasonable now, but yeah, just go eat a bunch of ding dongs or whatever. And I wound up seeing this guy, I kind of in a, just an average checkup, some guy was like, how you doing, man? I'm like, I was sort of from that, like, you're fine, you know? Like,
walk it off.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. What am I? I'm fine.
I'm a guy.
Yeah.
I come from a, how are you doing?
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
No one says, how you feeling? And if I feel like if more people to ask that question growing up, I would understand a little more to say, well, I don't feel anxious about this and scared about that. But also, I come from the world that you do. Like, nobody gives a fuck. How you doing? I'm good. And I just move on.
First of all, that's rough, man, what you're saying. And like, I do need to say, like, I had parents that did care about my feelings, like that, you know, like that. But I do also think maybe it was just part of being a man or just in athletics. Yeah. Where like, yeah.
Don't be a pussy.
Yeah, you're fine, man. Yeah. And then, and also, like, I looked, I think you tend to be like, man, my life's pretty good right now. I'm telling jokes for a living. Mm-hmm. I'm not starving, obviously. But
that you just said right there is a thing for me too with food. Like, nothing made me feel safer and more secure than going to bed with a full belly.
Yeah.
It was always, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and not be starving. I'm not homeless tonight. I'm not starving tonight. Like, I always had that fear. Like, am I going to be able to eat tonight? So I love to eat late. And as a comic, we do anyway. I
can't do it anymore.
I used to love to eat late.
Yeah. And, God.
Give me a pizza. I'll fuck the whole pizza, the whole thing. Whole thing, no problem.
Yeah,
won't eat the crust. 15 minutes later, I'm going back to eat the crust.
But you order one and pass out, and then
what do you mean? You're waiting on it.
Back when I was drinking, you know, poor pizza guys there, and So, anyways, like this guy kind of told me like. This doctor is like, maybe you're depressed. I'm like, yeah, maybe. He goes, talk to this person we have on staff. And she was like, explaining what's going on. I did not want to talk about it. And I, you know, started telling her some of the details. And she's like, oh, this is a form of OCD, man. This is, just trust me. Like, this is, let me go find you. So they found me this guy and I walked in and he was like, yeah, dude, this is called scrupulosity OCD. It's a thing. And, you know,
isn't it amazing too? Yeah. Like once you go seek knowledge and you're just suffering so much and there's people out there that can just, oh, it's this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what?
He knew right away.
So what's the, how do you work on that? Is that a medication thing or is that a mind over matter? Is it a awareness and try to work on not letting yourself do that?
Well, like I choose to ignore it. And
that's why push it down, bro. Push it down.
Yeah, yeah, no. I've been, like, there's some, it's like exposure is one way to do it where it's like, if you're afraid that you left the heater on or you left the stove on or whatever,
okay.
if you left the stove on or something or your gas stove on, there's a lot of people with OCD. They're like, I left the gas stove. I got to go back and check. And they go back and they check. 80 times, I get some of the treatment is like, well, just expose your fact that maybe the house is going to just have to burn down. You know, like that's like you consider that extreme, and it does sort of desensitize you. So with me, it was like, okay, you think that you might've done this thing. Let's just say you did. And what's that world like? You know, it's scary and awful. And I feel like, but for some, when you do sort of sit with it for a while, it becomes a little less real, or it becomes I have done some of the stuff I'm supposed to do. I should probably do more, but I've done some of it, and it definitely, I know how to deal with it when I start freaking out about stuff. I've gone through periods where I'm eating completely healthy in the way you're supposed to for almost like years. And then, I still every now and then, like I've had a bad run of stuff in the last few months.
I've been like that. I watch The Rock, I'll follow him, and he'll be like cheat day. And I'm like, fuck yeah, man, I'm gonna have a cheat day. And then I'm like, The Rock's burning 40,000 calories that day, 6 days a week, Ryan.
Yeah. It's, but man, when I go, it's always in a convenience store.
And oh, is it? It's never at like a sushi spot where you just get sick. It's always, is it junk food?
Yeah, it's junk food, man. Junk food. Yeah, because I eat pretty healthy when I'm not doing this. Yeah. But it's like junk food upon junk food. And then that, you know, those Grubhub stuff and all that.
Man, now you can just deliver it to yourself.
It's also like what we do. Sometimes you come back on a Sunday from the road and you just like sit down and I'm like, I'm not moving. Mm-hmm. And then it's pathetic, man. But
I mean, I've had my battles with OCD too. I remember like I used to live with my grandmother and she had a remote control and it just had the like, it was like rubber little pads for the numbers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there was always a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then some other ones at the bottom. And I would just run my fingers across them and count by 3 in my head.
Yeah.
And it'd go 4s across.
Yeah.
I got so good counting by 3s in my fucking head. And then I would notice that I'd go up the stairs and I'd either try to go 2 at a time and count how many they were and And then I would hear a word in my head and I would have to say it in my head and I'd break it down. I would do this weird thing where I would start on this index finger. Let's say you said bicycle. I go bicycle, 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 bicycle. Until I hit the one again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was like, we got to fucking check in on this shit. I know it's a lot of trauma and shit because it's right after my dad dies. We're living with my grandmother. And she lived in Baltimore. So that's what it was. For sure.
Yeah.
And I would go down to the basement. Bro, I'm not kidding you, 6 times a night to check that goddamn door because I did not want to be murdered. I remember one time my grandmother, I came upstairs, she's like, Ryan, she lived in the house for like 40 years. She goes, I've never felt safer and slept better in my home. I see you go down. I go, Grandma, that shit's going to be locked. I promise. It's going to be locked. They ain't coming in through that way. She loved it. She was like, don't go get that fixed.
She was like, this is a good thing you're doing.
I remember having to talk it out and be like, what's going on? And you realize all, you know.
I remember as a kid doing like everything had to be even.
Mm-hmm.
This is when I was the craziest. And I haven't talked
to What do you mean everything? Like, what are you doing? What had to be your steps?
Steps. It had to be 2s, 4s. Mm-hmm. But this is the craziest thing that I remember. I had an ice cream cone and the cone fell off. The ice cream fell off the cone and went on the floor. And I got it back up and I had there. And then I did it again. Because
you had to do twice?
2.
Even though it was a bad thing.
And I was with my friend Ted Ruger, and he's like, "What are you doing?"
No, that's interesting. I never thought of doing something negative twice.
I just felt like this. It's a compulsion
what if you to shit
have
to. Your
yeah, man. Luckily, you know that would have been
that would have been a terrible
Jesus,
time, dude.
Yeah.
Is that right? You dumped it again intentionally the second time because it happened once.
Yeah, I bet you I was in middle school at that time or whatever. Yeah, I mean that's insanity.
Would you do that with any of like your homework?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. Like,
I think it helped me be a good student because I would memorize shit. Back then the teachers were lazy in a way too, where they weren't. It was just a memorize it. Here it is on the test.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't a really. Did you learn so much?
Yeah. And I was able to game that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
In college, even I was like, I'm not going to class. I'm too tired from it. But I would just like, and then I would just practice memorizing.
I would learn until I'm like, does this professor, this guy made me buy his book? Okay, yeah. We're going to be going by this book. I know everything I need to know is going to be found in this book. You know, that's the guy. Yeah. I'd be like, we don't need to go to his class. It's all going to be in the book.
You understood ego and arrogance at that point where it's like, well, if he wrote a book, he's probably.
And I got to pay this much money for your book. It's all coming out of this book. Why would you want me to learn anything else? You wrote a motherfucking book.
Yeah.
Teacher didn't write a book. I'm going to memorize your shit.
Memorization was a big part of West Point. We'd stand in formation, you know, four times a day, and they'd come in and they'd be like, what's in the New York Times? Or what's in the news? And you would have to say it in a certain, you'd be like, sir, today in the New York Times, it was reported that, you know, and then you'd have to basically, or what else? Like you had to know the front page. You had to be able to be conversant on the front page of the New York Times and the front page of the New York Times sports page.
And, sports too. Yeah.
Which for me, that was like kind of easy. I'm like, yeah, they, you know, whatever.
Would you be comfortable talking about your mom passing?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Were your parents still married?
Yeah. Oh,
they
yeah,
were,
man.
They
yeah.
They've been they together had a, all the time.
A fantastic marriage.
Yeah. How's your dad right now?
He's okay.
And how old is he?
He's 80. He remarried.
He did?
Yeah.
Do you like this lady?
Yeah, I love her. Okay. Yeah. I love
her.
He's
happy. And
yeah.
How old is she?
Probably the same age. Yeah. Okay. She was a neighbor and then moved away. And then
how old was he when he got remarried?
That was just a couple years ago.
Wow. That's
so my mom had been gone for about 3 years and they started, you know, just, you know, they're 75 or whatever. Yeah. They started hanging out and and then they got married. So, and it's, you know, I think it's elongated his life and it makes me certainly worry less about him when I'm on the road.
It's nice he's got somebody. Huh?
Yeah, when he lost my, I think he was shocked. My mother, I think he was shocked that my mom went before he did. And that really was hard on all of us. But for him, I think he was in shock for a year. You know, he always
Did you know this was coming? Was it something she was sick? Or?
It was cancer, and it was. You know, she first told me about, discovered it in the, like, probably May, June of 2015 and went through treatment. By November, they told us she was, you know, in remission, and then it came back, and then over Christmas it started looking bad, and she was gone by February the next year, you know, and...
How old was she?
She was 72.
What kind of cancer?
Ovarian. They think it originated there. It was,
were you there? Were you able to say goodbye?
Yeah, I was. I was living in New York and I was not sure I was going to stay in New York. But I had about another 6-7 months on my lease and I was going back and forth during the treatment. And then I think it was maybe June the following year I had a lease still. And I was like, okay, I'll stay out there and just ride it out and then maybe come back or do something differently. And I came home around Christmas and things were bad. And my roommate, Ryan Beck, is a comic. I go, hey man, I'm not coming back. I'm staying here. I'm staying in St. Louis and I want to be with my dad. And I was like, I'll pay you. He was younger. And I was like, I'll pay you. Just drive all my stuff out. And so I never went back. Yeah. And I wanted to be with her for as much time as I had. And it made me realize I didn't want to be away from my family that much anymore. I'm pretty close with them.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So then you go back to St. Louis, you stay there and you start diving into comedy there.
Yeah. I mean, I was already at that point. I mean, this was not that long ago. So I was already.
But I mean, in the St. Louis community.
Did
you come up there already before you went to New York?
I came up in a few places. I came up starting in Houston, then Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
But I was always living in I was always come back to St. Louis. So at that time I'm a headliner, you know, St. Louis is a market where I sold a bunch of tickets. So when I was really close with the guys, the Funny Bone, and a lot of my friends were there. And so it was easy for me to come back in that scene. And I was still, even when I came back to St. Louis, that's part of why it was easy to move. It was like, I was at that stage where I'm working 45 weeks a year on the road. So it's like, it doesn't so much matter where you live. And it was a much, I love New York and I love the, especially the comics I met there, but it's a chaotic situation. So you're going from the chaos of the road right back into the chaos of New York. And then I was like, ah, I'd rather be around family in between the road gigs. So it was easy. Yeah. That part of it was.
Did you have any good conversations with your mom before she passed? And did she ever get to see you perform?
Oh yeah, man. Okay, good. My mother was,
she would come to shows.
Awesome, man. My mother was a writer.
Oh, she was?
Yeah, yeah. She was, she had a, she reviewed books for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for about 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And then she had a column in this paper called the Kirkwood Webster Times, which is sort of a suburban paper. It was a humor column. And, I go back and read it. You know, I was
going to ask you, do you have any of her?
I have all of them.
All of them.
Yeah. And I,
does that crush you to read those?
No.
I'm getting emotional thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, I get tears in my eyes usually when I read one, but I also am like, it's such a cool thing to have. And I also feel like such a dirt. I was so into my own life that I didn't read them when she was alive. And my mother was extremely brilliant writer, you know, and it's not what we do. It's funny. They're very funny, but it's not where we have to be this, you know, it's more just, she's making a point and she's, also funny within the point, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I try to post one, every Mother's Day and on her birthday on, 'cause social media.
I wanted to ask you how you keep her memory alive.
It's social media is good for some things, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that it's kind of cool where I'm like, you know, she was a local paper and a lot of people loved what they loved her column. The people that I still see people today out in the community, they're like, man, I loved your mom's column.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. But now, you know, we have all these followers and I just put it on social media, like a ton of people can see it and people love it. And it's a lot of it's really cool. She was a really, really great writer and she was very, very supportive. My dad was supportive too, a little harder on me in some ways, but also, supportive. But my mother, like when I quit my job to do comedy, my dad was not.
What was the job you quit?
It was a good job. I worked for Procter & Gamble. I was in sales. I sold Jif and Pringles and Duncan Hines. And like, I was making a bunch of money. My dad was like, not happy, but still supportive. Eventually my mother was all for it right away. And, you know, was very, very happy for me.
Do you guys have any good conversations before she passed that really stood out?
I remember, I remember a lot of, I remember she was, in the hospital for a long time. And then they were like, hey, she's going to go home for hospice. Like, you know, and I remember
she did get to come home.
She did get to come home and she called me and I still feel bad that I wasn't there already, but she was like, could you come here? And I was like, yes. And I got down there and I rode home with her in the ambulance, you know? And, once she got home, she was much happier. I mean, I just much more at peace when she was in her house. She was just so sick of being in that stupid hospital for all that time. But so I definitely remember that. And we talked a lot. I remember, this is interesting. I made her watch, my mom read everything. Like she read all the time. She reviewed books. She was an English major. She didn't watch a lot of TV. She didn't really care for TV, but I remember it was hard for her to read, I think towards the end. And she was terrible with technology. Like she could not have figured out. So I got her like one of those old school, just a little pop-up, put the disc in and it plays. And I got her that and she watched.
She could just listen?
She would watch TV shows.
Oh, so
she got into it. And I remember, I think it was Modern Family. She really loved it. ER, she really I'm watched a bunch of TVs. So I was like, well, try this. Maybe Larry Sanders. I think she liked it, but yeah, we talked about that. And then I made her watch this Eagles, It was the Eagles documentary, you know,
and the band.
Yeah. And I never really watched music documentaries. So I thought when I, the first time I saw it, I was like, this is amazing. They talk about, this is like, they weave the lyrics of the song into how they figured out. I'm like, that's dummy. That's what every music documentary yeah. does, you know? And I was just so like, and I remember I'm like, why is the, one of the last things I made my mom watch was this thing. And we watched it together. And she was like, yeah, I think she was saying like, she was like, it's good. But in her own way, she was like, yeah. And she liked the Eagles.
I ain't getting that hour.
She basically said, and Glenn Frey's a little arrogant, isn't he? she was dead on the money. Like he's like a little, he's a little self-congratulatory, like in her way. And I'm like, God, this, I'm making my mom watch this dumb thing. But man, I remember Bob Dylan. Mm-hmm. I remember playing that. I think it was I played like a Bob Dylan album or something, or whatever, and my mother was very into music, and I could just tell it affected her so. I remember sharing that moment, like so emotional, you know, at that point. It really, really affected.
It took her somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And honestly, at that point, my mom was on some pretty heavy pain meds, I would imagine, too. But I remember that was a moment of like, yeah. But yeah,
she got to pass in your home around her family then?
Yeah, she
ultimately, like,
she died. Yeah, I was at my brother's house, and you know, my dad called us that night, and we knew it was coming. And we, yeah, I remember going on a, me and my brother Matt took her for a walk. She was in a wheelchair or something. We took her for a walk, maybe the day that she got home from the hospital, and we took her for a walk, and that was great. That was really cool. I could just tell she was really happy to be out and not in that hospital and walking with her two sons. But then, I don't know, man, you know, you just, I was really, really lucky. I know when you were, you know, the theme of the podcast is some of your low moments. And a lot of people, I think their low moments are like, you know, they come from screwed up family situations. And I didn't have that at all. Like, and I think it's funny for me sometimes to talk about my father was a wrestling coach and did push me. And he did, you know, but like, in my opinion, there was always a line where it was like, he didn't cross. It was like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pushing you hard, I'm pushing you. But if he did cross it, he was immediately like, you know, I love you. And this is not as important as that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I do remember telling my mom that, like, I remember telling her like how, that's, you should tell people more stuff. And I remember telling her like, oh God, I think I was in I had a friend or somebody that was struggling, and I was like, man, they had a terrible childhood and I did not. And I'm, thank you for that.
Nice. You got to say that to
her. Yeah, I did, you know.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're also old enough to understand that. And especially when you get into comedy, you're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, man. So yeah, my friends went through, yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like you lost your, you know.
Yeah, yeah. My mom was gone. My dad died. We were 16 and it's over after that.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, and I still remember. It's nice you, because I have friends whose parents are still together and stuff now. And they should be like, hey, thank you for a fucking solid childhood here.
Yeah, I got lucky, man. You know, and my dad's still alive and he's 80 and he's pretty strong, man. And, you know, I'm.
Does he ever still fuck with your wrestling? You ever come by him? You ever act like he's going to grab you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah. He's still got fire in him.
Yeah, yeah. Right, he's still like strong as an ox too, man. Like he's got played some football back when you played football, didn't treat your injuries the way they should. Mm-hmm. You know, they just give you a shot and say go
North
back
Dallas
out. Yeah. He told me there's a lot of that, you know, but so he's got some back pain, but man, if he grabs you, you grab his shoulder, you're like, good God, man, my dad he's strong as an ox.
Still solid.
Real solid, yeah, man. All right. Yeah. Real solid. Yeah.
Dude, this is a great episode. Thank you for coming on.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you advice you give to your 16-year-old self.
Nothing is permanent. I think would be the advice that I would give myself. Like it's whatever this situation, whatever this thing that seems like it's the most important thing or the thing that you failed at, just go try again, or just like things change and they usually have a way of working themselves out. I don't want to steal from somebody, but you know, the comedian Gary Goldman.
Yeah, of course.
Is one of my favorite comics, but I've heard him say, I think he said it, it might've been in a bit, but he said somewhere, he's like, you know, that Eminem's like, you only got one shot. You know, he's like, in show business, you have so many shots. And it's Gary Goldman, by the way. Go see he's great.
It's the truth.
But I do think that, like, especially, and maybe that wasn't 16-year-old self, but you just, you're going to have so many runs at doing different things, and it's never over.
Right.
Yeah, it's never over. Yeah.
Thank you again.
Yeah, thanks,
Promote
man.
Whatever you'd like one more time. Your special, all of it, please.
Oh, yeah. The special is called The Champ, and it's on YouTube. If you Google it, it's not the movie with Ricky Schroeder and John Voight.
Yeah.
Dude, that movie, that's the first one. I don't know which came first, either Champ or Black Stallion.
Oh, Black
Stallion. Both of them made me cry.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which one came first.
God, man, it's funny we're talking about this.
I sobbed at little Ricky Schroeder fucking, wake up, Champ. Oh, God, I remember seeing that, and the first time I'm like, what's happening inside me? And that's like, I'm that age right there now. Man. What the fuck?
Yeah.
The Champ.
Bro. Black Stallion. I watched Black Stallion in the movies with my mom and dad.
Do you know, I just went on YouTube the other night, put it on my TV. I fast forward all the way to that fucking race, and that little motherfucking kid throws it. Listen, I don't know who that kid is, but I'm looking at it. It looks like he really is riding that fucking horse. And that horse is hauling ass. And I'm in my house like, he threw that mask off. And I'm like, oh, get it. Goddamn.
I'm going to go watch that.
Black
man.
Stallion. I just watched the race is so good. The build up.
Yeah.
Man, thank you again. Oh,
it's great to see you, man. Yeah, it's awesome, dude.
And as always, thank you guys as well. Ryan Sickler on all your social media. We'll talk to you all next week.